It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When the Hollywood Theater opened in Dormont on Labor Day 1926, it was showing silent films. Long after other elegant movie palaces of the era have closed, the Hollywood still stands 90 years later. Tomorrow night, a 90th birthday party is being hosted by Pittsburgh native and actor David Conrad, and he's chosen a restored copy of the 1949 film noir classic The Third Man as the film to be screened. David Conrad is known for, among other roles, his portrayal of a Navy lieutenant alongside Robert De Niro and Cuba Gooding Jr. in the movie Men of Honor, his appearance in the comedy Wedding Crashers, and his role as Jennifer Love Hewitt's paramedic husband Jim Clancy in the television series Ghost Whisperer. He joins us now to talk about The Third Man and hosting this weekend's anniversary celebration at the Hollywood Theater. David Conrad, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's good to be here.
Let's talk about the Hollywood Theater and your association with it. Apparently, you went to see movies there when you were a kid. What memories do you have of the Hollywood Theater?
My good buddy Rob lived up in Upper St. Clair, and you really can't get to Upper St. Clair through public transport, at least not from East Pittsburgh. So I'd take the bus downtown, then we'd take the Shannon Drake out to Dormont, and he would take the same ferry, but from the same trolley from the other side, and we'd meet in Dormont and go to see movies. And Dormont was like this nice little cool sort of working class town. It was like Swissvale up in the hills for me. And it was great. You're 13, 14 years old, and your parents give you a little bit of money, and you go and you watch a movie, and you know, you get a cup of coffee. But back then you didn't get a cup of coffee. You got a milkshake. And it was just great memories, like seeing the first Star Trek film. And might have seen Lawrence of Arabia, maybe. The thing about a theater that size is you realize film was a medium meant to be seen on a 60-foot screen. You know, it's supposed to have that power. So Dormont, it's a great theater. I mean, it's a gem.
And so this would have been what year that you were
1980, 81.
So, wow, really? So early 80s,
yeah.
And it sounded like it was very eclectic fare. It wasn't like going to the Cineplex and you were seeing what was out now, that you could be seeing movies from all sorts of different eras.
Yeah, I think even then, I mean, maybe it's because I grew up next to the Regent Square Theater. I think that, Pittsburgh Playhouse. It's that mixture of, as you're hitting your adolescence, you want something unique, you want something that charms you, you want to fall in love with a particular thing, person. And those kind of theaters give you that particular strange beauty.
And the Hollywood Theater is a movie house that has risen from the ashes, so to speak, on a number of occasions. What do you think it is about the Hollywood that has given it a second, third, fourth, fifth life over these last nine decades?
Well, I think the Hollywood, just in and of itself, the lines of it, it's like a perfectly designed ship or a perfectly framed painting. It really is kind of a perfect space. So I think people feel that. But I feel like the theater thing, stepping into grand metaphor notion, is these old theaters are in a way a lot like small Pittsburgh neighborhoods. Is things that people wrote off that were of a time of the past are now all the rage. Yes, let's live in Millvale. Let's live in Sharpsburg. Let's rebuild East Liberty. Places that people had thought, oh, that's passé. That's the way people want to live now. They want to live with a main street. They want to live with a traditional sense of, here's these schools, and here's your community center, here's your little restaurant, we buy locally. I mean, little theaters, to have your little theater is the same thing as having your communal space.
But what else is it about these types of theaters that separates them from the multiplexes, you know, the mega stadium movie theater experience? It's not just about the surroundings and the acoustics and the aesthetics. Isn't it also about the types of movies that theaters like this bring to audiences, that stuff that you wouldn't see at the bigger theaters, right?
Yeah, bigger theaters are kind of like a Google search. The bigger theaters are using a release of 2,000 to 4,000 screens. If you don't make $100 million or $60 million in a weekend, you're a failure. You know, you've divided the film industry into massive hits and then things under $5 million. And the idea of a healthy American or even an English filmmaking culture where you can make good small movies has been wiped out by Hollywood's machine for the most part. And these theaters give you an education in actually, you know, great film history. I mean, there's still a lot of good films being made all over the country, but our sense of history about them zips away really quickly. I mean, you know, when Star Wars came out in 1977, it was in the film theaters for a year. A year. You could go that summer and you could go the next summer. These days, a film comes out, it's gone in 2 weeks. If it doesn't make its money that quickly, forget it. I think these old theaters remind you of a film history and a dialogue with American film art that you should get if you really do want to understand how we look at ourselves. I mean, we invented movies. It's our form.
Which brings us to The Third Man, which is a movie that you chose to be at the center of this celebration tomorrow night at the Hollywood Theater. And I'm curious, there are a lot of great movies. Certainly The Third Man is one of them. But what was it about The Third Man that led you to choose it to be the film to celebrate the Hollywood Theater?
The Third Man for me is that first love that you think is going to fade away, or you imagine. It's that first date that you don't realize is going to haunt you 30 years later. And I saw it when I was 16 in the house of a girl that I was crazy about. And to this day, we're still super close friends. And the movie itself still refreshes itself in the same way that our friendship does.
Was she your Anna Schmidt?
She, you know, it's kind of like it's a healthier version of one of Fitzgerald's heroines. Like, we're still past. Nobody had to die.
Okay, good.
The Third Man's, to me, what's perfect about The Third Man is that it takes both film's powers and film's weaknesses and admits to them. Because I think that when you try to say that film has the same noble and integral size of a great novel or a I don't know how to put it. I think film has a lot of weaknesses that need to be admitted to. And I think structurally, The Third Man admits to the gimmicks that film uses, the power that film has, the seduction that film can use. And it sort of pokes fun at them at the same time that it's using them. So you end up being amused and charmed and romanticized. But then at the end, you end up going, wow, that's a massive message there. Instead of a film trying to go, this is an important message. We're going to show you. I feel like what's great about film noir, but especially movies made in the time of The Third Man, is that they did both things. They entertained you. They charmed you. They made you laugh out loud, but they left you with something that stays with you the rest of your life.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with actor David Conrad. He's hosting a 90th birthday celebration of the Hollywood Theater in Dormont tomorrow night. And the centerpiece of that celebration is a showing of the movie The Third Man, which has just been digitally restored in a 4K film version, which even if you've seen The Third Man before, my guess is that it will be like a whole new experience once you see the movie in this restored form tomorrow night, if you have an opportunity to go. The Third Man has been called in England, I guess they say it's the greatest British film ever made, even though it seems in many ways like an American film because it's American actors and American characters who are the two main protagonists in this story. Joseph Cotten as the Pulp Fiction writer, Holly Martins, and Orson Welles as the unscrupulous yet endearingly charming Harry Lime. What is your take on the film? And what makes it such a film that people keep wanting to go back to? I've seen it. I literally have seen it probably like 50 times. And you, I think, have seen it as many times.
I feel like The Third Man, at the height of American power, let's say the thing that defines who we are as a country, is really the Second World War. I mean, the Civil War, you could say, the Civil Rights Movement, the New Deal. But the World War II made us the power we are. It gave us this sort of noble position in the world. And right at that point, they make a movie, Carol Reed and Graham Greene, two English guys, with the cooperation of two great American actors that really call the whole thing into question. The whole sense of idealism, the whole sense of saving things, of being able to walk into a place and fix it, of being able to say you know what's right, you know what's good, you know what's right and wrong, and to put your hand into another culture. Right in 1949, these two guys are saying, be careful. And, you know, if there's been a message to us in the last 50 years, it's be careful about that, about our sense of exclusiveness, our sense of glory, the shining city on the hill of America. And there are, we've done a lot of great things, but it's a telling comment that I think every American should take a glance at this film. And also, you laugh, and it's a romance, and you get to see Orson Welles, one of the great actors in the history of American cinema. I also think The Third Man's cut on a dime. It's beautiful. It's funny. It's great music. It's barely, it's an hour 45.
We should probably maybe tell a little bit about what the story is for people that, I think I've seen one interview this week where the person interviewing you had not even heard of the movie, which
I wish I was them, because the thing about The Third Man is if you go in not knowing anything, it's one of the great treats in the history of art, really. And I'm almost hesitant, so you're going to have to do it.
Well, you have Harry Lyme, and Harry Lyme is...
He's dead,
or so we think. And I guess for people that haven't seen it, we have to figure out how to do this without spoiling it. But he's the best friend of Holly Martin's, a kind of a clueless, naive American guy who's good at heart, played by Joseph Cotten.
Yeah.
Who comes over there and is looking for his best friend and is told that he is dead and thinks of him as this great guy. And it turns out that, Harry has been involved in the black market.
Yeah.
And so you pick it. I don't want to tell the whole story. I mean, you tell some of it.
Well, it's a story about two college chums. And from the get-go, again, it's 1949. And in our general view of America, everybody's got a job. We've just come out of the war. It's the new America. We're going to rebuild. Pittsburgh's booming. Everybody's going to work. And here's a guy, Holly Martins, who can't work. He can't find a job. So he goes to Vienna to get a job from his friend, Harry. And when he arrives, he finds out Harry's dead, and he's hosed. And it's about his journey to find out who Harry's killer is. And he deals with a brilliant, kind of hard-bitten British captain, a working-class English guy, and a bunch of nefarious and sort of dangerous and also moving Viennese who've been through a literal living hell. What was the famous quote about Vienna? We could survive a third world war, but not a second liberation. The Third Man's a highly stylized film. It's incredible camera angles. There's specific lighting. You can tell, they set that up. There's also these great studio shots where you know you're in a film studio. There's background shot. There's rear projections. But then there's also these times where it drops into, there's no soundtrack. You're watching people's faces. There are chases through the streets. You're in a sewer. And it's cold. And I think, again, it's Reed's way of saying it isn't a game. What we're talking about, it's not a joke. It starts as a game. It starts as funny. And then it kind of tears away the veil and says, these things are brutal. What we're talking about is a horrible experience and sort of dark truths. And then it falls back into being a film again. And I think that's the greatness of the film, is it can be a bauble. It can be a gem and a thing you laugh about. And then it can be something you carry around the rest of your life, which is weird to me. I never thought that I would always go back to The Third Man. I mean, when I was a kid, I saw The Deer Hunter, and I was new. All my life, of course, The Deer Hunter will mark me. But I never thought The Third Man, and it has.
There is a scene that occurs in this movie on a Ferris wheel, and it takes place between two main characters, Holly Martins and Harry Lyme. How can Harry Lyme be in this scene if he's dead?
Yeah.
And, you're just going to have to see the movie to understand it in that context. But it's a scene that sums up a friendship between two people who are close but who suddenly don't seem to understand one another. And it also speaks to the Cold War opportunist mentality and which way are you going to go? Are you going to be altruistic or are you going to really be the ultra uber capitalist like Harry Lyme has apparently become? So let's listen to a little bit of the scene on the Ferris wheel between Orson Welles as Harry Lyme and Joseph Cotten as Holly Martins.
Old man, you never should have gone to the police, you know. You ought to leave this thing alone.
Have you ever seen any of your victims?
You know, I never feel comfortable on these sort of things. Victims? Don't be melodramatic. Look down there. Would you really feel any pity if one of those dots stop moving forever? If I offered you £20,000 for every dot that stopped, would you really, old man, tell me to keep my money? Or would you calculate how many dots you could afford to spend? Free of income tax, old man. Free of income tax.
Well, the great thing there is they play it, and then still at the end, they're not going to kill each other. Welles isn't going to push him out the window, as far as we know. Cotten is still talking to his old friend, and it's this weird... that thing of duty and not duty, but the thing of friendship and ties in a weird way triumph all. I mean, yes, you'll do the things you have to do, but you can't lie to yourself that you're still standing in front of someone who, was your closest friend.
it really is a remarkable scene. And the other part of the movie that is omnipresent and almost like a character in the movie is the zither. We hear the, and we'll play a little bit of the Third Man theme for you so you can get a little taste of what the soundtrack of the movie sounds like. Okay, so that's Anton Karas. He's playing an instrument called the zither, and you would not think that this would be the soundtrack. It sounds a little too jaunty, a little too colorful and bubbly to be the musical underpinning of this story, and yet it seems to work brilliantly. But how? It's like there's this disconnect, but yet it's connected.
Yeah, it's the genius of like listening to Townsend and Keith Moon, like playing drum and guitar in a way that aren't complementary, but that work. You know, they fight each other, but it works. And I think Carol Reed, so Reed met Karas at a party welcoming the film crew to Vienna. And Karas was a Romani, a gypsy, who lived in Vienna, who'd lived through the war, who was basically an entertainer. And he played this instrument, and Reed was obsessed with it. So he used a little bit of it. Selznick hated it, who was the producer, one of the producers. And Reed kept putting more and more and more into it. And he came to realize that it sort of became as much a counterpoint as an underplaying of the film. And it became a national obsession. I think for like 2 years, it was the biggest hit in the world. Karas toured the world. He became this super famous man. And then he went back to Vienna and had a little cafe called the Third Man Cafe. You know, who knew?
As you can tell, we are both big fans of the Third Man. So this was what you felt this was the movie. This had to be the movie to celebrate the Hollywood Theater.
Yeah, I feel like it fits into a Pittsburgh sense of humor. I think we're accustomed to big dramatics, but also laughing at the same time. And Pittsburgh's a culture where, you know, people are talking during tragic moments, that you're having a wake and someone's laughing or someone's fighting in the back, and the two kind of go side by side. I think we live in a culture where those things overlay, where someone's giving a speech and then somebody's telling the kids in the corner to shut up, and he's like, I'm trying to talk, and the wife's like, you talk too much, you know? Like, all that stuff lives side by side. And the Third Man has that kind of quality where people are trying to do something and something's undercutting it at the same time. But they're all just as lovely. But also, I just feel like we've got to stop watching movies on phones, even on our TVs, on tablets. Is that films were built to be a massive melodramatic medium. They're meant to be seen at size. Grace Kelly's face is supposed to be 20 feet tall. You know, North by Northwest, you're supposed to look at Mount Rushmore and be like, oh my God. If you watch it on your phones, you lose the majesty. That's the whole point.
Theaters get shut down all the time. Why is it important that a theater like the Hollywood remains open? I mean, aren't there other theaters? I mean, aren't there other ways of accomplishing what you just described? You know, why is a little theater like the Hollywood, a standalone theater, important?
Because as much as we need to buy local and think local, we need to speak locally. We need to curate locally. We need to tell local stories. And if that's not just us sitting in a bar talking about who we are or having our own, you know, jukebox that has music picked by the bartender, you've got to have somebody who says, I'm the guy who lives in this town. I'm the woman who lives in this town. And I think these are great. And I'm from Pittsburgh, and this is my choice of good films or good music. Okay, how do we as a group sit down and say, well, why do we from Pittsburgh think this is good? What's our particular history that made us pick these things, whether they're local or not? If everything's pumped in from some source, like an internet server or a producer in LA or a producer in New York, it's all the same. We end up like, you know, the cultures of Walmart culture. I mean, it's not to mean that like There Will Be Blood's not a great film, but, you know, why? Have a local space where you sit around and choose. Sit around in your own bars and tell your own stories. If you don't do that, you lose it. You know, you got to record these things or remember them. And I feel like if you have your own theaters, whether they're stage or movies even, it's us in Pittsburgh listening. I went to a memorial this week in Los Angeles for a producer I worked with. And the rabbi got up and he said, remember, the magic of stage, the magic of these performances is there's a person on stage and they look into the audience and they go, hey, it's just us. And in that exchange is the magic. Like a kid who knows it's make-believe, but still is their eyes are wide, is that we have to look at Pittsburgh and go, yeah, it's just us, but there's magic in that, you know, town to town. And these little theaters are encapsulations of that, you know, in the same way that community space is, or a great old bar, or like a Tesseros or something, or a Kelly's. You go there to know what the neighborhood's doing. You go there to know, hey, this is how this works. Or a radio station, you know. You guys are this town. You speak to these people. You tell Pittsburgh stories. You're from Pittsburgh. That's super important, you know. So we should keep doing it. And we can, you know. Pittsburgh's booming. We can show the nation.
I love all the references. Yeah. Tesseros, Kelly's,
yeah.
WESA.
There you are.
Pittsburgh actor David Conrad has been our guest. He's hosting the 90th birthday party for the Hollywood Theater. It takes place tomorrow night. I'm not sure exactly what time.
Show up around 7.
Show up around 7?
The thing will start rolling around 8. There's beer. There's music. You can sit there and drink beer and watch the movie. You can drink more beer after.
Sounds like my kind of theater.
It's good times.
And the third man will be showing, and that is David's favorite movie. David Conrad, again, great thanks.
Thanks so much.
And congratulations to the entire Essential Pittsburgh staff, including producer Marcus Charleston, assistant producer Katie Blackley, and engineer Tom Hurley on winning 2 Golden Quills at the 52nd Annual Golden Quill Awards last night, one in the Public Affairs Community Service category and the other in the category of Arts and Entertainment. We couldn't do it without your support. Thank you for listening and have a great weekend, everyone. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.